You are listening to Hillary Topper On Air, the small business podcast to help you grow both personally and professionally. And now, here's your host, Hillary Topper.
In life, many of us face the challenge of a loved one being diagnosed with a life-changing disease. How do we cope? What do we do to make sure that person is financially secure? I'm Hillary Topper, and welcome to Hillary Topper On Air. Today, I have the great pleasure of being joined by Diana Latazio, who is a partner at the Russo Law Group. She's going to help guide us through this difficult terrain. Diana, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So can you share a little bit about yourself and your background and how you came to the Russo Law Group?
Sure. So I am a first generation American. My parents were both, they're both immigrants. They were born in Italy. And so I like to say that I'm living the quote unquote American dream. I was born and raised in Woodside and Astoria. So my accent probably already disclosed that. But I moved to Long Island about 15 years ago. I have three sons, 8, 10, and 13, who are my entire life. I'm a soccer and football mom, and I also have a cat and a dog who are best friends.
Love it.
Yeah. So in terms of my legal background, I have been practicing over 20 years. So I started out in Queens, and then I moved around a little bit to some firms on Long Island, and I settled here at Russo Law Group about 5 years ago. My focus has always been elder law, estate planning, and special needs planning. I've been here about 5 years, and I became their newest partner last year.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about how you actually decided to go into elder law, estate planning, and special needs. I mean, you graduate from college, and is that the first thing you think that you're going to go into elder law?
Absolutely not. I had no idea what I wanted to do. I changed my major in college a few times, and then I decided on law school. And while I was there, just like anything else, you're exposed to all these different specialties. And I really gravitated toward elder law. And at the same time, I was going through it because my grandfather lived with us. And so I was witness to all of the challenges that we were going through to try to get him the care that he needed and trying to keep him home for as long as possible. I've always, you know, loved and found so much wisdom in seniors. And so it was just a natural progression for me.
Love that. Awesome. Now, I know on a personal note, you're going through a lot with your father who has Parkinson's. It's got to be horrible and so rough. Can you talk to our listeners about, you know, just trying to get through the process of getting onto Medicaid and taking care of his ongoing needs? Because I'm sure so many people out there are like you, going through this, and that would be really helpful.
Absolutely. Yes, unfortunately, my father was diagnosed with Parkinson's. He just turned 74, so he's actually, you know, pretty young and should be really enjoying his retirement, working so hard his entire life. But unfortunately, this disease has really stripped him of a lot. And so we found ourselves in a position where his, you know, physical aspects were declining rapidly. And what we didn't realize, you know, I didn't know much about this terrible disease before his diagnosis, other than it was something that Michael J. Fox has and, you know, it causes tremors and shaking. But after researching and going through everything, navigating through his diagnosis, there's a whole mental aspect to it as well. It can cause delusions, hallucinations, dementia, and he's suffering from a lot of that, as well as, you know, his mobility, his limited mobility. And so there comes a point when you have to decide what the best course of action is for your loved one. So of course, we want to try to keep him home and have him age at home for as long as possible. And there is a great program called Medicaid. It's community or home care, where you can get help at home so that you're keeping your loved one at home and trying to avoid or, push off for as long as possible having to admit them into a facility. And this is a really great program because there are actually no penalty rules currently, which means that even if someone has a lot of assets, with the proper plan, I can make them eligible, or any, elder law attorney that's experienced in this area you should really consult with, because we can go ahead and make them eligible, pretty quickly and get them on Medicaid, which will cover aides coming to the home to assist them with their ADLs, or activities of daily living. Those are things that me and you take for granted, but it's basically anything like walking, bathing, feeding, toileting, medication prompting, just the things that the basics that are needed to keep that person home. And the hours can range. It's all based on level of need, and it can range. The shortest interval of time that someone will be sent is 4 hours. So it can range from 4 hours actually to 24 hours, if needed.
Well, that's great. It's good to know. When my dad was starting to go re I mean, he had gotten Alzheimer's disease, and it took a long time before it actually came out, but at some point he actually made the decision himself to go into a not assisted living, but an independent living, and he was there for a while. And then went to assisted living. I mean, does Medicaid pay for any of that? That gets expensive. And at some point, I thought, oh my God, I'm not going to be able to afford to keep him going in this facility.
Yeah. So these are great facilities, but they are very, very expensive. They can range anywhere between, on the low end, what I'm seeing is about 7,000 a month, but their bills are bifurcated. So it includes room and board, and it also includes what the medical needs are of that person. So the higher the medical need, the more expensive it will be. And it can cost up to $20,000 a month. Sometimes I don't even see a difference between, a bill from a skilled facility like a nursing home and an assisted living facility. Luckily, there are some facilities that do have attributed Medicaid beds. And so you can apply for one of those beds if, luckily, you get there when there's availability, and also as long as you meet the criteria for Medicaid. Some of the facilities don't accept it at all. Some of them have some beds, and some have beds with a wait period, which means that they want you to come in private pay for a number of years. It's about 2 years or so. And then they'll gradually, as a bed opens up, transition you into a Medicaid bed. And the difference really is that if you're private paying, you usually have your own room. If you transition into a Medicaid bed, it would be a shared room.
Now, talk to me about how families can proactively plan for legal aspects of long-term care. I mean, nobody wants to plan, nobody wants to do this, but it really is a necessity. So, especially if somebody has some life-changing diagnosis that all of a sudden comes up, can you walk us through that?
Sure. I like to think of it as an insurance policy. You hope to never need long-term care, but in the event that you do and you didn't have long-term care insurance, at that point, you're either uninsurable or the premiums are astronomical and it's unaffordable anyway. So what you can do if you get diagnosed with an unfavorable illness, or as you age and you're more concerned with long-term care, you can create a Medicaid Asset Protection Trust. And that's an irrevocable trust. There is a 5-year look-back period on any transfers into the trust. Most of my clients will at least put their largest asset, which is their primary residence, into the trust. And I have safeguards in that document where I will give them exclusive occupancy so that they can live in the house the rest of their lives, rent free, never have to worry about anyone, evicting them or anything like that. So there are safeguards within the documents. And then you can also fund it with liquid assets, if you would like to. There are some restrictions on that, though. If you're putting liquid assets in, you lose the right to withdraw any money that you're putting into that trust. So that if you're moving a bank account at Webster Bank with $100,000 in it, the grantor, the person creating the trust, can no longer go to the bank and withdraw that money. But again, we put safeguards in there so that someone has access to it. But that's basically, the nuts and bolts of a Medicaid asset protection trust. And also, there's no downside because in the event that you don't make the 5-year mark, so let's say, you intend to be okay and to be at home for 5 years, but then God forbid you have a stroke and you have to be in a nursing home. I can easily undo or collapse that trust, and then we can revert to an emergency plan. So you're not at any disadvantage by creating that trust.
That's so interesting. Thank you for sharing that. So before we move on, I have to say I am so appreciative of our sponsors and must take this time out to thank them. Please support our sponsors and tell them that you heard about them on Hillary Topper on. Special thanks to the Russo Law Group, Long Island Signature Elder Law, Special Needs and Estate Planning Law Firm, and Buddha Bath, a natural bath and body company that offers a wide variety of products, including body butter, bath bombs, soap bars, and sugar scrubs. Now back to you, Diana. So, what advice do you have for individuals who find themselves suddenly responsible for making important legal decisions on behalf of a loved one with a serious medical? I mean, what's the first step they should do?
First, they should have a consultation with a qualified elder law attorney. If they have authority to make those decisions under certain documents, like a power of attorney or a healthcare proxy, you want to make sure that all of the powers that you may need that are foreseeable are included in that document. Sometimes I review documents and they're very general and very limited. And so there may be a specific power that I need that is not included in that document. And then if the principal or the person that signed that document loses capacity, it's too late to have them sign a new document. And then you're looking at a court proceeding called a guardianship proceeding, which is very expensive and very invasive. So you want to try to avoid that at all costs. So the first step is speaking to someone that's knowledgeable. Making sure that you have authority to serve. If the person still has competency, maybe having them sign these advance directive documents, like I said, a power of attorney, a healthcare proxy, a living will. You want to make sure that there's a smooth transition and that if that person loses capacity at any point, that there is someone else that can step into their shoes and continue to make financial decisions and medical decisions for them.
Great advice. Thank you. What are some of the misconceptions about elder law, and how can individuals better understand the support it provides?
So one big myth is that we're doing something illegal or sneaky by trying to make someone eligible for Medicaid, and that's not the case at all. What we do is legal. We follow all of the rules, all of the laws, and the guidelines. And what it really is just asset protection planning. So you've worked so hard your entire life. And we don't want to see you now use all of your resources to just pay for, your medical care. We want to see you leave a legacy for your family. We want to see that pass, through generations. And, so that's the big myth I would say there is that either we're doing something wrong or that I absolutely do not qualify for Medicaid. I have too much money. I hear that a lot as well. And I'm here to tell you that you may not think you do, but there are a lot of different exemptions. And these rules are extremely, extremely complicated. And so we're constantly having to update and learn different things. And so, just don't take that for granted. Definitely, it's worth a consultation with someone. It'll save you so much more in the end. And, we'll just go through the different rules, the exemptions, and if we can qualify you and it's something that you want to do, obviously, we can apply for these benefits.
And also, could you share a success story? Maybe somebody would be able to relate to that more, where there was a positive impact of proper legal planning in the face of life-challenging events.
There are so many, too many to name. Again, it's keeping our clients home for as long as possible that otherwise thought that they wouldn't be able to live at home. And there are so many different ways that we can do it, whether it be by a reverse mortgage, applying for home care. But that's really the greatest success is for someone to actually be able to age in place or age in their own home. And we do this on a daily basis. And also just getting people the proper help that they need. Sometimes being at home isn't the best situation because the person's needs are just way too advanced and they're not being properly cared for at home, even with 24-hour care. It's just not enough. They need like skilled care. They need nurses and doctors around the clock. And then the best plan for them would be to be in a facility where they are being taken care of and you don't have to worry about someone not showing up for a shift or, and having all those extra stresses on the family that's still trying to work and, raising their own children. And it's really, really stressful to get that call in the morning when you're driving to work that, your father's caregiver, has COVID and can't show up for 5 days, 10 days. And so sometimes, that facility, being in a facility is the best option. And having, if there is a community spouse, which is, a well spouse that's still at home, allowing them to still be able to live in their home in the community and not totally impoverished. So there are guidelines, impoverishment rules as well, that allow that community spouse to hold on to a certain amount of resources. Through, bank accounts and also a certain amount of income, and even shifting the income, some of the income from the person that's in the facility to the community spouse to be able to have them live in their home and be able to afford, especially Long Island, and taxes and everything else, be able to afford to still maintain their home for as long as possible. So these are all success cases.
Great. Thank you for sharing those. Anything else you want to add before we wrap this up?
I just want to touch on something that I think is important, and I'd like to maybe share that with your listeners. So, what you want to always have in the back of your mind, if your loved one is ever in the hospital, is that a 3-day hospital stay automatically triggers Medicare to pick up. And so that's very important. So if someone's in the hospital for 3 days or more, Medicare, their primary insurance company, assuming that they're 65 or older, will automatically trigger so that if that person needs rehabilitation before they're sent home, Medicare will pay days 1 through 20, 100%, and then days 21 through 100, there is a $205 copayment. But it's great because then you get those 100 days where you can make accommodations at home to accept that person back, whether it's, you need to, get the tub, cut or whatever it is, make the doorway larger for a wheelchair, any of the accommodations that you need to make, you kind of have those 100 days to start getting everything at home in place. And the person is being cared for in a facility and getting physical therapy, trying to get them moving again, get them walking, stairs, whatever needs to be done to get them back at home. So that's one important thing. And if they are, when upon admission, if they're in a Medicare Advantage plan, which is Medicare Part C, it's a good idea to think about disenrolling them into straight Medicare. Because straight Medicare with the supplement is much more generous with rehabilitation and generally covers those days 21 through 100, which can be like, $13,000 or so. So it can save you a lot of money. And if someone is in a facility, It is a special enrollment period, so you don't have to wait until, October through December. It doesn't have to be within that eligibility period. It's automatically special enrollment so that this can be done and you can maximize on those rehabilitation days.
That is awesome. Thank you, Diana. I know a lot of people don't know that, and that's really important information. Thank you. So lastly, for those looking to connect with you and learn more about elder law, estate planning, and special needs at the Russo Law Group, can you tell them how to get in touch with you?
Absolutely. So I am the lead planner in our Garden City office. We have three convenient offices. One is in Garden City, one is in Lido Beach, and the other one is in Suffolk County in Islandia. So you can just call 516-683-1717. You can ask for me. You can also visit our website at www.vjrussolaw.com.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate your time today. And I also want to thank our sponsors once more, the Russo Law Group, Long Island Signature, Elder Law, Special Needs, and Estate Planning Law Firm. For additional information, visit bjrussolaw.com and also Buddha Bath, a natural bath and body care company. For more information, visit buddhabath.net. And last but not least, I want to thank you, our listeners, for tuning in each week. If you want more information on this show or any other show, visit our website at hillarytopper.com or find us on Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, Amazon Alexa, Apple Podcasts, you name it, we're out there. Have a great week, and we'll see you next time.